Hey, y'all, it's me, Dr. Samina Ramon, Gyno Girl. Welcome back to another episode of Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. I'm Dr. Samina Ramon. I'm a sex med specialist and menopause specialist in downtown Chicago, and have now a concierge practice for sexual medicine, menopause, and some GYN things. I am super excited to bring you guys a book that's coming up soon, so hopefully stay tuned to that. But today, I just finished a conversation with Dr. Tiffany Moon. A lot of people know her from a lot of different things. She has candles. She has anesthesia expertise. She has a book called Joy Prescriptions. She was on The Real Housewives of Dallas. She's a board-certified anesthesiologist, entrepreneur, twin mom, and star of the Bravo TV, The Real Housewives of Dallas. And she just wrote this book, Joy Prescriptions, How I Learned to Stop Chasing Perfection and Embrace Connection. She is board certified an anesthesiologist. She's a keynote speaker, entrepreneur, mother of twins, and does everything but is trying to do less because she wants to connect with people and find joy. She's published over 50 peer-reviewed publications is one of Dallas Magazine's best doctors, serves as the oral board examiner for the American Board of Anesthesiology, and is an associate professor of anesthesiology and pain medicine at the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas. She was the first medical doctor and Chinese American cast member on Bravo's Real Housewives Dallas, and her story has been featured in Forbes, Variety, Harper's Bazaar, USA Today, and more. She lives with her husband and kids in Dallas, and so we talk a lot about her book and about why she wrote it and about seeking joy beyond checking off boxes and chasing the grind and doing all the things that we all think we have to do to bring ourselves happiness, and really what actually does bring her happiness. We talk a lot about her journey, so hopefully you guys enjoy this. So let's get at it. Hey, y'all, it's me, Dr. Samina Ramon, Gyno Girl. Welcome back to another episode of Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. I'm Dr. Samina Ramon, and as you heard in my introduction, I'm super excited to bring you guys someone who I've followed for many years now and really love everything that she's been doing. Dr. Tiffany Moon, I'll introduce you like Oprah. It's Dr. Tiffany Moon. Welcome to my podcast. Yay. Anyway, I'm super excited to talk to you. And I have your book, Joy Prescriptions, which is, you know, the main thing we want to discuss. But I love everything that you have been representing, particularly when it comes to this book. Like, I think that diving right into it, like as women in medicine, we are all so goal-oriented that we get to certain goals and then all of a sudden we're like, is this it? But I just love just re-inspecting what joy is, right? Because I think that if you watch the news, if you're on social media, like, there's so lack of all sorts of joy out there that the fact that you're, you know, looking to find, you know, really just tell us what brought you into this realm of wanting to seek out what joy really meant to you.
Yeah, my whole life growing up, I just was on a path of achievement, you know, going to the right schools, getting the right grades, going to medical school, getting into residency, and everything seemed to be a checkbox of sorts. And I kind of thought that when you checked off all the boxes, that mysteriously a light would shine upon you and bless you with joy and fulfillment and satisfaction and a sense of worthiness. And guess what? But it didn't.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I love all of the things that I did, and I love being a physician and a mom and a wife and an entrepreneur, but something was missing. And after going to years of therapy, reading lots of self-help books, listening to podcasts, I kind of figured out that the joy has to come from within. And I kept looking for it externally instead of trying to cultivate it from within.
Yeah.
Which sounds like a bunch of mumbo jumbo new age. Like, what does that even mean to cultivate joy from within, right? Like, I just said a bunch of meaningless words. But really, it happened that way. And I really figured out that I need to figure out who I am, what I want out of life, stop people pleasing everyone around me, stop hanging out with these toxic people that drain my energy, learn to say no, learn to take risks, and when I started on this joy journey, it really transformed my life. I mean, that's when I opened up myself on social media. That's when I finally said yes to Bravo after they had been asking me for several years. And I was like, no. Yeah. Finally, I was like, you know what? I'll try it once. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
And I just, I feel like it changed the whole trajectory of my life when I started to work on my joy.
Yeah. And I think that, like, you know, if someone just picked up your social media and looked at her, she's beautiful. She's a doctor. She's, you know, she wears beautiful clothes and all the things, and she must be very happy. Right. But, like, you know, you're, I think that's the one, there's good, the benefits, and there's like negative things around social media. And I feel like it's the comparison game that people get that probably bring people to, you know, a negative place when it comes to social media. But what do you think? Like, I mean, if someone said, well, how are you not happy? You know, like, I think that that's something that I feel like people would want to know, because, again, it's just what you people see on social media or like on media in general, right?
Yeah, well, I have a lot to say about social media, but yes. I'll answer your question first, which is to say that I wasn't unhappy. Like, when I started on this joy journey, I wasn't like, oh, I'm so depressed. I don't know what I want to do with my life. It just was like a nagging sense of like, is this all there ever will be? Like, I have checked off all the boxes on this list that you gave to me, and like, where's my prize sort of? And there wasn't one. But I wasn't unhappy. I still had lots of moments of happiness. I think that happy as a feeling is like very conditional, because people will be like, I'll be happy when, I'll be happy if, and it's always based on something else. And I feel like joy is a more pervasive state of being than happy.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like it's the expression of nourishing your soul, surrounding yourself with the right people, extricating yourself from, you know, difficult situations that are not good for you.
Yeah.
So I think like joy transcends happiness. It's all very murky. Again, I'm saying all these mumbo jumbo words.
No, but it's true. And I think you're right. And you know, like my specialty, like I'm a sex med expert, right? So I talk to women all the time about pleasure. Like, not just like, you know, if you ask an average woman who's been in a relationship for a long time why they have sex, like 0% will say it's because they're horny and they want like pleasure. It's more... It is. It's true. Most of the time it's like, hey, it's because I want, you know, I want to be able to like, you know, keep my relationship with my significant other going, or I want to like, I want to get that in girls trip. So if I do this for my husband, then like, he'll give me my girls trip. You know, like, it's all this BS that you'll come up with, but like 0%, like literally will say it's because, you know, they're horny and they want pleasure. And it's because I didn't think we're trained to like seek pleasure for ourselves. And that's why there's like a huge orgasm gap with a pleasure gap and all the things. But don't you think a lot of it is our conditioning, like not only as women, but like, you know, you and I are, you're East Asian, I'm South Asian. There's like that conditioning within our culture that we shouldn't strive for pleasure and comfort and all the things.
Yeah, totally. I agree with you. I laugh, but that is like very true what you said. I think, you know, as children, we seek pleasure. We do things that feel good. And then the adults are like, don't do that. Like, don't suck your thumb. Don't touch your privates, you know? And you're like, oh, I didn't know. You know what I mean? And then you become societally conditioned to like not seek pleasure. And almost like do things for achievement rather than pleasure. So I think, I think women are particularly bad about that. I think men, you know, give in to their pleasure principles a little bit more than women do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just think that that's something, you know, what your book really opens up is that like, you know, we should be seeking this for ourselves. We deserve this. Like, it's not like it's just for a certain person or it's just for, you know, this is an inner peace that you receive, right? Like, it's an inner peace.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And so, and you also talk in your book about like a fertility journey and how, you know, there was actually a study that came out in Northwestern in 2023, and it looked at women physicians, and it was like over 1,000 physicians were surveyed. And it was really a look at sort of like childbearing infertility and trajectory of careers in women in medicine. And it showed that like 3/4 of women delayed childbirth if they're physicians, 1/3 women had struggled with infertility. And of those third, like over 50% had to use IVF, like for their journey as physicians. And over a half of them passed over career advancements in their career because they wanted to be with their children, or, you know, because of the way, or even going part-time and all those things. And it sounds like, you know, you're like a classic case of, you know, what we see in medicine, what we've all experienced in medicine, is like the patriarchy that doesn't allow us to do what we need to do.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. I was full-time for 8 years with director of residency recruitment. So I had like administrative appointments. I was part of multiple committees. I was running clinical trials and publishing a ton. So like it was full-time and then some, right? With overnight trauma call.
Well, there's not a visit to academics, right?
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah. And then after 8 years, I went part-time to 4 days a week, which is 0.8. And then a year after that, I went to 0.6.
Yeah.
And 2 years ago, my department put me up for promotion from associate to full professor.
Yeah.
My department did. So I passed like our internal departmental review, or else they would have been like, oh, you don't have enough achievement research, your teaching scores aren't good enough, whatever. But I passed the departmental review. And then when they sent it to the big PNT committee, they came back and said, you're not ready to be promoted. And I said, why not? And they said, because you're part-time. And I was like, can you make that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. What?
Because I've published X amount of papers, have excellent teaching scores. I do really difficult cases in the OR that surgeons request me for.
Yeah.
But because I only work 3 days a week currently, you're not going to promote me. And they're like, yep, you're right. Yeah. And I was just befuddled. I was like, no, you should extra promote me because I published more working 0.6 than most of your faculty do working 1.0.
It's just wild
to me that hold women back. And so I didn't get promoted, which is fine. I was pissed about it for about a week or so. And now, like, do I even think about it on a day-to-day basis? No. But I just think it's unfair that kind of thing continues to happen when the reason why the large majority of women go part-time is so that they can spend more time at home with their children.
Right. And it's this whole concept, I think, that really drains most of us, is like this idea of having and doing it all, right? Like, it's just such a BS concept. I think Shonda Rhimes said in a speech recently that, like, when she's like killing it on Grey's Anatomy, she's missing her kids' school. And when she's with her kids, she's missing something at work. Like, you just can't do both at the same time. That's really good, really well, actually. And so, how have you balanced it or not balanced it? Like, because it's not a balancing act. It's like choosing, right? Choosing one thing over another at one point.
Yeah, I think it's choosing and being intentional and being able to wear the different hats that we all wear on a daily basis, and then not feeling bad for when you're at work, you're not with your kids, and when you're with kids, the emails are piling up. Like, that's okay.
Yeah.
Like, anyone who expects that they would be, you know, a great mom and a great entrepreneur, a great doctor all on the same day that's not realistic, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there are days to be a great mother and there are days to be a great entrepreneur. I mean, I speak now at a lot of different conferences. And so last month I spoke at 2 conferences. I was gone for like 6 days total.
Yeah.
So obviously, you know, I was not a great mom during those days that I wasn't with my kids, but maybe I was, because maybe I was setting an example for my children that when you have a passion for something and you're trying to grow yourself in something, that you have to make sacrifices and you cannot be in 2 places at once. And that when I came back from those conferences, we had our mommy and me time, we went shopping, we watched movies, we had spa time, and I made up for it. You know what I mean? So I think this illusion of balance is what drives women crazy, because there isn't really any balance.
And it sucks your joy, right? Like, this idea, like, that's the whole thing. It's like, oh, I'm not doing it all and I need to do better. So I'll keep going and grinding.
Yeah. But see, the thing is that we have the final say on whether that sucks our joy or not. Like, you get to decide if that sucks your joy. And if you decide that you're a great mom and a great doctor and a great entrepreneur, then that's what you are. Like, that's the crazy thing about mindset, is that you kind of get to decide. And I mean, the kids these days say it's Delulu, which is the cool way to say delusional. I was like, what is Delulu? They're like, that girl is Delulu. Okay, so be delusional. Like, drink your own juice. Tell yourself that you're an amazing mother, that you're an amazing physician. Like, drink your own Kool-Aid, because quite frankly, no one else is going to, you know, say all these wonderful things to you. And the fact of the matter is, beating yourself up and be like, oh, I was a terrible mother today. Oh, you know, I didn't get to my email inbox today. Like, it doesn't serve you to have that guilt or to shame yourself. It doesn't serve you at all. It just makes you feel worse about yourself.
Absolutely. And I think that for, like, I'm like you, I'm just a people pleaser. It's hard to say no to things. It's, you know, you feel like you have to do everything that, you know, people ask of you. But at some point, and I don't think you're there yet, but when you hit like perimenopause and like all the shit's hitting the fan with your hormones and all the things, like, you feel like you have to say like no more, because that preserves your sanity.
Yeah, no, I am knocking on perimenopause's door. It's a little early for me, but if you read my book, you know that I do everything in life a little early.
Yeah, that's true.
So I am getting the vasomotor symptoms, the brain fog, like the dry skin. It's right on the horizon for me.
Yes.
I feel it.
Right. And that's, you know, that's one thing that, you know, my other area of expertise is menopause. And so that's one thing I talk to patients about in perimenopause all the time, is because I think the irritability that comes up, the nagging things of like, I feel like a midlife woman has to balance too much on their plate, right? Sometimes they're taking care of their sick parents. Sometimes they're taking care of their kids. Sometimes they're dealing with all the work-related things and all the extra things. But I do find a lot of women pivot in perimenopause, that becomes like, I'm not doing any of that, and I'm pivoting the way that I want.
Yeah. Over the last few years, I've really, you know, started to set healthy boundaries, which, you know, growing up as a Chinese American, like, I never saw healthy boundaries being modeled for me. My parents did not have boundaries with each other, with their work. Like, they didn't know what boundaries were. I just saw everything bleeding into everything else.
Yeah.
But I've read a lot of books, done a lot of therapy lately, and now I have a lot of boundaries. Like, I'm not going to do that. One of the things that I told my assistant this year is, like, I cannot work for free anymore. Mm-hmm. I have done my fair share of lots of talks for free, lots of volunteering. Like, I've done it. No one can look at the things I've done and be like, oh, she's not helping others.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but I'm trying to grow myself as a professional speaker, and that means getting paid to speak.
Absolutely.
So if they don't have the money, the budget to hire me this year, then the answer is no. I was like, don't even bring it to me. Because if she brings it to me, I'd be like, oh, well, you know, I'm free that day and it's for a good cause or whatever. I was don't even bring it to me. If they don't have the budget, the answer is no.
Right. Because, you know, we have to value ourselves as clinicians, as experts in areas, as speakers, as whatever we're doing. Because if we don't ask for it, we're not going to get it. Right. Like, it's like, no one's giving it to you. Like, they want to do it. Fine, some nonprofits can't afford things and whatever. But, like, at some point, like, you have to understand what your worth is and ask for it.
Yeah, exactly. And men do a fine job of that, actually.
There you are.
It's one of the things that we could maybe emulate from them.
Yeah, so true. And I think it's so, I think I don't know if I heard a comedian say this recently, was like, as they were losing, you know, estrogen in menopause, like, they became, you know, like, more decisive. They were asking for what they wanted. And they're like, oh, I realize I just became a man. Like, my doctor replaced my testosterone. Oh, that's why I have no shits left to give. I'm basically like, you know, go fuck yourself. And I'm a man.
That is so funny, but not wholly untrue. Yeah.
It's so true. Because I think that, you know, again, especially like, some women are just more prone to people pleasing than others. But that's been the biggest hurdle for me personally, is like, okay, I have to not care if that person thinks X, Y, or Z about me if I decide to do it.
Exactly. And in my culture, I mean, I was kind of raised culturally to be a people pleaser, absolutely. You know, like, and that's what I was praised for when I was young, was being smart and obedient. Like, those were the only two things I ever remember being praised for.
It's so funny. It's so interesting because I feel the same. Like, you know, if you listen to your parents, you listen to the people around you, this is what you're supposed to do, right? Like, that's how you get ahead. That's how, you know, people will respect you, like whatever. But it doesn't serve you well in the long run.
Right.
I want to talk a little bit about some of the issues around burnout that you talk about, like the whole idea. I know, I feel like it's trending or something. It's trending. But the reality is, it's like, I think, and I think you would agree with this, like the system in medicine is not built for like success for either patient or for the physician, to be honest. Like, I think that, you know, patients aren't getting what they need when they see certain physicians, and physicians are burning out because of the system that has been built. Like, can you talk about your burnout experience a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, I think all of us, when we were young and applying to medical school, wanting to be doctors, we did it because we ultimately wanted to help people, you know, mm-hmm. and we liked science. And then you go to medical school, you go to residency, fellowship, become a doctor, you're doing all the right things, you're working your tail off. And somewhere in your mid-career, you're sort of like, is this it? Like, is this everything I've sacrificed my life for? Yeah. I mean, my 20s were gone. I spent my 20s in the library.
The library, yeah.
Right.
True.
Because it wasn't easy to get over all these hurdles. Like, I had to study. I'm not just naturally brilliant and can memorize the Krebs cycle. Like, I had to study that.
Which we use every day in medicine.
Yes, which we use every day. Yes.
Right.
And so I had a little bit of resentment, I think, about it, that I had missed out on a lot of opportunities that my other friends got to do, like backpacking through Europe one summer while I was in a research lab, you know, padding my resume so that I could get into medical school, right? Because they told me you need to have research experience, you need to have a publication. Yeah.
Right.
So
even when they're out partying and you're like in the lab.
I was exactly. No, my roommate was like out partying. She came home at 2 a.m. from the club. I came home at 2 a.m. from the library.
Sometimes later than
like
that.
We were not the same. Yeah. So my burnout started, I would say, about 7 years into my career as an attending physician, when I had basically mastered most of anesthesia, right? Like, there were not a whole lot of cases that truly challenged me. Whereas, like, you know, right when you're a new attending, you're like, oh my God, you know. And I just wanted to do something else outside of medicine. I didn't know what the other thing was. So I was sort of grasping at straws. I was sort of throwing things at the window and seeing what would stick.
I love your candles, by the way.
So I tried. Yes. We need to send you some aromesthesia candles. So I threw the wine business, and I was like, oh, I'll do a candle business. Oh, I'll do social media. Oh, I'll become a Real Housewife. That'll fix all my problems. I tried being a stand-up comedian. I was literally just throwing things at the window because I needed something outside of medicine to express my creativity that made me laugh, that allowed me to connect with other people. Because as much as I love anesthesia, there's no laughter.
Yeah.
There's no creativity. You better not get creative in the operating room, if you know what I mean. And there's definitely not much connection with other people because the surgeons are the surgeons and my patient is asleep. So it was getting kind of monotonous. You know, I'm like, I need to do something else. And that's when all this other stuff opened up to me. But through doing all of that other stuff, social media, writing my book, planning a women's conference, going on Real Housewives, that like totally blew my life open and exposed me to all sorts of opportunities that I never would have had.
Yeah, I love that you created the Leader Conference or the Leader Summit, right?
Yeah, Lead Her Summit. Yeah. You have to come. It's going to be so fun.
I wanted to come last year, but, you know, I'm on the faculty of Ishwish, the fall course, and it was right at the same time. So,
okay, well, it's November 7th through 9th this year.
Okay.
In Dallas.
Oh, Dallas. Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm going to mark the calendar.
You got to fly to Dallas.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah, but it looks like it's always a good course. Like, people are not just medical women. It's like women from a lot of different career paths, right?
Yeah, it's for female entrepreneurs, which some are doctors, but many are not. We had people in finance, lawyers, accountants, real estate agents who are running their own, you know, real estate brokerage. Yeah. So basically just women who are running their own businesses out there hustling. They want to learn about, you know, being an effective communicator, negotiation, marketing, building a strong personal brand on social media. Because I don't care what kind of business you're in, you need a strong personal brand, whether you're a dentist or an accountant or own a, you know, rug cleaning company. You have to build a strong presence, because if people don't know you, then they can't do business with you. And I'm like, social media is free. Like, it's literally free. Yeah. Like, you didn't have to pay for a billboard on the highway. It's free. Everyone should be using social media to promote their business.
Yeah, it's true. Actually, and you know, because I started my own practice 10 years ago, just in sexual medicine and menopause. And it was true. Like, nobody knew I was there. So I started, like, you know, meeting people, or then it got word of mouth, but some people come from social media or from, like, my podcast or whatever. But
yeah, there's so many women out there with amazing businesses or amazing ideas, but they're like, oh, I couldn't possibly make videos. You know, I don't want to get in front of the camera. I'm like, why not? Yeah. Like, you're the face of the business. If you don't get in front of the camera, who is? Who's going to talk about this business or be more passionate about this business than you?
Yeah.
Like, you have to. I'm just like, get over it.
That's so true, actually. And I think once you get over that hump, then you feel more comfortable.
Yes, but they need a little help, or they need some tips or hacks on, like, what should I post? Yeah. And so I give them some ideas. Yeah. And, you know, I'm like, social media is not new. Just, like, follow this account and just copy what they're doing.
That's funny. Let's talk about as you evolved into the Real Housewives. So I've watched some of the different ones, but when I found out you're on it, I think you first announced it on the Doctor's Purse website, the Doctor's Purse Facebook group.
Yes.
And I was like, oh my God, I have to watch Tiffany. So I followed you during that period of time. But tell us what, like, got you to want to do it. And then I want to talk about some of the things that happened on there and how it affected your career.
Yeah. So the reason I even was recruited to do the show was because my friend was on it.
Okay.
And basically, I think, not that I have vast experience, but basically, in order to become a housewife, you have to have some connection to a current cast member. Like, you can't be someone off the street that none of the cast knows. And at the end of each season, they ask the current cast members if they have any girlfriends that they could promote to be on the show.
Yeah.
And Deandra would always be like, oh, my friend Tiffany, she's, like, really funny and fabulous and loves fashion and purses, but she doesn't want to do it.
Yeah.
Like, she's very busy. She's an anesthesiologist. She has twins at home.
Yeah.
And they would always try to get me to do an interview with the casting agent, but I always said no.
Yeah.
And then I hit this, like, mid-career existential crisis. Like, is this all I'm ever going to do? Am I just going to clock into the OR every day, clock out, like, take call, miss my kids' things, be sleep deprived, like, all this stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, maybe I'll try it, right? Like, and so I talked to the producer and I was like, I don't want to get into something that I can't handle, and I don't want this to affect my professional reputation. And they were like, no, we'll make sure that doesn't happen. And I was like, okay, fine, I'll do it.
Yeah. And then you did it. And then
I did it, and it was a shit show, and now I'm not doing it. End of story.
What happened with, how did your department take it?
Not well. Yeah. Not well. They were not excited when I told them.
Yeah. And then obviously, like, there was that whole incident. I want to talk about some of the racism that you experienced. Like, we all obviously, like, if you're out on social media, you get trolled, you know, for one reason or another. And sometimes it's around the things you're saying, but sometimes it's just because of how you look, race wise, whatever. You even talked about this in your book, about the whole chicken foot experience and how that brought about so much, distress, really. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, the whole chicken foot incident is so stupid. I invited the girls to dim sum, and chicken feet is, like, one of the dishes at dim sum that we eat traditionally. Now, I know that not everyone is excited to eat feet, but in my culture, it's very normal. My kids eat it. And the producers thought it would be funny if I made all of the women try a foot.
Yeah.
So I did. And I was very pushy and very insistent. And in normal life, like, I wouldn't have acted that way. Mm-hmm. But because we were on a TV show and I knew the producers wanted me to make a moment of it, I was extra pushy. And I was like, just eat a foot. Like, just put it in your mouth. It's fine. I'm supposed to be, like, funny and not that deep, you know?
Yeah.
And one of my castmates took it way too far, was like gagging, putting her food on the floor, made a whole thing of it. And again, she's also trying to make a moment, right? We're all like upping. We don't normally act like that. But then she said that I was racist for making fun of my own mom on TikTok, which I did. Yeah. And I was like very confused because I was like, how am I racist against my own race? Like you basically called all comedians racist.
Right, because, exactly.
Yeah, like that's what they do.
Yeah.
And then the straw that broke the camel's back was when her husband and his brother went on social media and tagged my employer and insinuated that I was drunk the night before I had to go to work. Yes, girl. This is all documented. And tagged my employer and said like, oh, you were blackout drunk the night at my house and you had to work the next day, which is untrue.
Right.
And the Bravo producers backed me up because I told them when I had to work the next day that I had a 2-drink maximum.
Yeah.
And it's all on camera.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that's blatantly false.
Yeah.
And then they said that I was racist again for making fun of my own race and then compared me to Nazis in Germany. Yes. Yeah, it was wild. And this is not my castmate. It's her husband and his brother. And I was like, gentlemen, please do not get your panties in a bunch. This is called the Real Housewives of Dallas.
Yeah.
We don't need to be hearing from these men. Like when men get into like women's little fights,
yeah,
I just think it's like not appropriate.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was the final straw. It was already going poorly for me. I did not enjoy the experience. I don't think if for anyone who watched season 5 of Real Housewives of Dallas that it looks like I'm enjoying myself.
Yeah.
But that was the final straw. And I was like, I am done.
Mm-hmm.
I am done.
Oh, good for you. Well, I'm glad you stood up for yourself because that's not okay. Number one. Number two, sometimes it's hard to say like, because this was an opportunity you wanted to try and then you gave it your best, but then, it backfired big time.
it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be fun and I was going to make these girlfriends and we were going to be silly and pull these pranks on each other and Bravo was going to pay for us to take a fabulous trip.
Yeah.
You know, we ended up filming in the middle of COVID, which again, no one could have predicted.
Yeah.
And my fabulous trip was driving an RV to Oklahoma and I was just like, this is not it, you guys. Like, this is not it. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. You talked a little bit about the birth of your twins, your cute little girls, and some of the anxiety that brought. I mean, obviously, as an obstetrician, I mean, anyone that has had twins knows that there's a lot of risks involved with twin pregnancies. And how did you end up coping sort of in that period of time?
I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
People talk about postpartum anxiety. I had prepartum anxiety because I was pregnant with twins after struggling with infertility. And I was put on bed rest at 30 weeks. And I was so scared because we know too much,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, they don't have surfactant. They're going to have respiratory issues and like retinopathy of prematurity.
Yeah.
Like all these things went through my head, right? Because we know too much.
Yeah.
And so I was on bed rest. I was doing my hardest to, keep my babies in. I would pray every day and I made it to 36 weeks. I was like, oh my gosh, like how did this happen?
Yeah.
I gained 75 pounds in like 7 months, which is wild.
Right. You also made 2 humans. So
yes, 2 humans at the same time,
yeah.
Because as I said in my book, even my ovaries are overachievers. And the fertility treatments may have had something to do with it. Anyway,
right.
Yes, but the ovary joke was cuter.
Yeah, I like that.
So, and then I had my babies, and I was so blessed and just so over the moon to have these two little humans. But then the enormity of it hit me, and I was like, oh my God, what do I do with these babies? And like, one of them had really bad reflux, and basically after every feeding, she would spit half of it out. And she wasn't gaining weight, and I for sure thought she needed like surgery and had like gastric outlet obstruction. And I just drove myself into a tizzy. Thinking about all the possible things that could go wrong as a new mom. And that is no way to live life.
No, it's very strange.
And I wish that I had sought treatment at the time. I did not. I basically threw myself back into work as the treatment, which was not correct. I went back to work 6 weeks full time after having twins. My body was like, what the hell? I was pumping in the operating room. I mean, you know, I had this like portable thing that had a battery pack. And so I just like put it in my scrubs inside the straw. And I would just be like, you know, drawing up some norepinephrine, running an ACT. Like, and the thing is like, the surgeon's like, what's that noise? I was like, mind your own business. What I did was throw myself back into work as the solution for everything. And although it was a distraction, and although it did get my mind off of, you know, baby things, it also did not actually treat the underlying cause of my anxiety, which came to bite me in the ass several years later when COVID hit. And then I really lost it. But, you know, I was scared of what people would say or think, or, you know, I thought that maybe they'd put me on meds and I'd have to like disclose it when I recertified for my boards and stuff. And I didn't understand. And there was a stigma to seeking care for mental health. And so I just didn't.
I think that's one thing that's, you know, is prominent for women, but also within our cultures, right? Like, it's just a huge stigma around mental health to really seek to even seek treatment. Like, what is cognitive behavioral therapy? I know, because even culturally, like if I tell, you know, my dad about someone having you know, I'm going to put someone in cognitive behavioral, what is that? You know, they're always like, this doesn't even like, there's just so much stigma around mental health. I think that the fact that we can't bring ourselves to do that is damaging to us. But I want to also just talk for a second, because something you said really struck with me, is that like, you went back to work and you're pumping in the middle of being in the OR. And like, I don't know when this became the norm that women feel like they have to like to go right back into work and do all the things. I just remember like when I was pregnant, you know, I was contracting in the middle of a C-section, and it was like, you know, you tell someone else, well, when I was pregnant, I also had to blah, blah, blah. And it was like, you're one-upping me because you had to, you know, like, it just makes no sense that the toxicity of our career, you know, we tell patients they shouldn't do any of this, and we go and do the same thing and worse because medicine is so toxic, especially for women.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. I do hear people trading war stories of like, I operated until my water broke, you know, like, and then I finished the, you know. But yes, I don't think we should, you know, try to compete with each other on how hard we overworked ourselves. I think we need to have more compassion for ourselves and for each other. And I think that, you know, this new movement, especially with this younger generation, about being more open with their mental health and actively seeking treatment for it, is a move in the right direction, for sure.
Absolutely. Do you remember that, I think it was on social media a while back, or it was trending that there was an OB who delivered her baby, and then in the right after her delivery went to deliver someone's baby because their doctor couldn't make it? And it was like she shouldn't have had to do that either. Like, you know, like, that's not okay for her. I mean, it's great that she did it, I guess, but like, you know, it's like, oh, like, again, these war stories of how hard we kill ourselves to self-sacrifice, right? Like, it's not I feel like at some point we shouldn't always like praise self-sacrifice.
Yes, yes. And I've fallen victim to this too, for sure. I'm sure people will, you know, say things. And then, you know, my friend was telling me in France, you get a year paid maternal leave. I'm like, excuse me, I got 6 weeks of non-paid. And not only was it non-paid, well, I guess it was paid because I basically exhausted my PTO.
Yeah.
they basically took it all.
Yeah.
And then I had no days left. They were like, oh, your FMLA only accounts for 12 weeks. If you don't come back to work, you might not have a job. I was like, what? It's crazy. And then so then I'm back at work. Uh-huh. I maybe only had like a week that was non-paid because I, you know, used up all my PTO. Then in the first 2 years of my girl's life, like when they were sick or something, I couldn't even take any days off because I had no days left. Like I was at zero.
Yeah. And it's so sad that we have to we have to make these decisions and choose these things. And at the end of the day, it's like, you know, what brings you that joy? Is it going to be, you know, like, and I feel like there was a time in my career where it did bring me a lot of joy to stay in the hospital till late at night and stay for that extra ectopic and stay for, but people ask me all the time, like, are you sad that you gave up OB? And I'm like, you know, my quality of life is just so much better that just doing GYN outpatient, mainly minor surgeries. That no, unfortunately, I'm not sad. Like, I'm very happy to not have to go in the middle of the night. And
you did your fair share. Right. It's not like you tapped out early. Right. I mean, like you probably delivered thousands of babies. Like you did your time.
Right, exactly. But it's just interesting to see that, like, I mean, I'm glad. I do think the next generation's not putting up with it.
Also, though, can I just say, as great as I think our young generation is, because it is the future, sometimes I'm worried because I have 21-year-old stepchildren. They're also twins, like my twins. And on Christmas, before Christmas, I asked one of them to help me address envelopes for our family Christmas cards because I was so busy and they needed to go out or they were going to arrive after Christmas. And she was like, where do I write the address? And I was like, oh. And then she was like, where do I put the stamp? Is it the top left corner? And I was like, have you never received a letter? And she's like, I have. I just don't pay attention. And I was like, oh, I'm worried. And it, you know, that's a small thing. Honestly, anyone could goof about that, you know, but it's just like they have the world at their fingertips, right? Because they grew up. I mean, my stepchildren got smartphones when they were like fifth grade. Yeah. They were like 10 or 11. They got iPhones. Yeah. I didn't get an iPhone until I graduated from medical school. Same. I got my first iPhone. Same. And so I feel like, you know, they don't feel the need to like know stuff because they can always look it up.
Yes.
And they
trust everything they read on Google too, which like,
oh my God. And then my kid the other day, like was like, mommy, no, that's not blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no, that's incorrect. Yeah. I was like, where did you hear that?
Yeah.
She goes, YouTube. Yeah. And I was like, oh, so just because you saw it on YouTube, like you think I was like, any idiot can make a YouTube and say anything.
Exactly. Or like my kids will be like, well, Alexa, can my dog eat this or will they die? You know, like, and I'm like, why don't you do some actual work and read, like find the actual literature to see whether or not your dog will die if you eat this.
Yeah. So I'm a little worried of who's going to take care of us when we get old, girl,
me too.
Because these young people, okay, yes, they're into their mental health and I love that for them, but like, they don't want to stay late. Mm-hmm. They don't want to work too hard. My daughter told me that she doesn't want to be a doctor because I work too hard.
Exactly.
That's literally what she told
me.
And I was like, oh, we're screwed. I don't know who's going to, AI is going to have to take care of us when we're old.
I mean, that's what they're predicting, right? I mean, like, thank God we have some surgical skills so that we can, AI is not going to put someone to sleep and AI is not going to.
Yeah, I made a funny TikTok that I was dancing with the ET tube and a laryngoscope. And I was like, job security is knowing that AI can't intubate. Yeah. And then I put ... yet.
Yeah, exactly. It's so true. But it's kind of scary. Right. But I mean, it's true. Like, I don't know. Like, I know they have a lot more, like they always say, there's more medicine for them to learn now, but they're just, I feel like a lot of them just aren't putting in, you know, the work and, you know, there's a hierarchy in medicine that used to be like really, you know, it's not there anymore.
I know. I had a medical student call me by my first name.
Yeah.
I was like,
no, wait.
No. I actually don't really care, but the fact that you did it before you asked me
exactly. Yeah. You took it.
Yeah.
You overstepped your boundary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's awesome. Anyway, I want to be cognizant of your time. I love the book, Joy Prescriptions, How I Learned to Stop Chasing Perfection and Embrace Connection. What kind of advice would you give the listeners who are trying to figure out the best way for them to? Because you're right. And I think the other issue is around social media, right? Like you get connected with certain people, but you don't get connected, right? Like
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's all very superficial.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not a true connection. Social media is not real. I feel like I can say that because I am, quote unquote, an influencer.
Yes.
I mean, we could go a whole nother hour to talk about social media. But what I will say is this, comparison is the thief of joy. It really is. You should only be comparing yourself to yourself. And when you look at someone else's feed, you have to remember that is very curated, that stuff that they want you to see. So people are not posting their bad stuff. They're only posting their good stuff. So for you to then compare your life to someone else's feed is an unfair comparison because
right.
it's their greatest hits versus your everyday.
Right.
So that needs to stop immediately.
Right.
And also know that it's all very manufactured and it's what they want you to see. And it's just, I love social media. Like, it's brought so much to my life. And some of my best friends now, actually, yeah. people are like, how did you meet? And I'm like, I DM'd
it's
them.
Not true.
Yeah. And now we like hang out and they come to my house. Yeah. But yeah, at first I slid into their DMs. Like, what do you want me to say? So, you know, social media has brought so much good to my life, but it's also brought so much bad.
Yeah.
It's made me cry. It's made me
Absolutely.
Be angry. It's made me second guess myself. So,
yeah.
you know, the good, bad, the ugly of social media, we can get into that. I think I'm going to give a talk about that at Lead Her Summit this year.
Oh, wonderful.
Because last year I didn't really give a talk, but I emceed the whole program.
Yeah.
Like I introduced everyone,
yeah.
made sure we were running on time, made sure all the songs that were playing for the speakers were correct. But this year, I think I'm going to try to find someone else to MC, and that way I can actually give a talk about, I don't know, social media or like the importance of building a strong personal brand, something
yeah,
of that nature. I'm still marinating on
that's
it.
That's really good.
But yeah, you have to come if you can this year.
I definitely will try. It's so funny you mentioned that about social media too, because sometimes my daughter's 13, she's not allowed on social media yet, but she knows when I've had too much Instagram because she'll see me throw the phone. And she'll be like, Mama, I'm putting an Instagram limit on you today.
Yes, please. Please take my phone away from me so that I can actually be present with the people who are in front of my face instead of interacting. Yeah, I set a 30-minute timer for my Instagram. This is bad, but at night, I drink a glass of wine to unwind.
Yeah.
And because I say that I own a wine company, so I have to consume wine because I need to be knowing what's going on in the market out there. How will I stay apprised of wine knowledge if I don't continue to drink?
Exactly.
So I drink my glass of wine at night and I set my timer for 30 minutes. And that's my like social media time. Because during the day, generally speaking, I'm not really on social media that much, maybe a little bit in between surgeries or if one of my cases gets bumped or something.
Yeah.
But like in the OR, I'm teaching, I'm, you know, pulling up drugs, getting ready for the next case, consenting patients. Like it's a busy day.
It's a busy day. Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's a good way to really summarize that. To be present, I think, will bring people more connection, more or less, right?
Yeah. I mean, don't you go to dinner and you see like a family and they're all on their phones and no one's speaking to each other? It's wild. It's wild. And I've done it too.
Yeah,
I've been out with my girlfriends before. And then for something, you know, somebody pulls out their phone and then we all pull out our phone. And then like 5 minutes later, no one's talked to each other. And I'm like, okay. And then I'm like, okay, besides, you know, like emergency kid issues or whatever, like let's all put our phones away and interact with each other.
Yeah, it's so true. My husband's not on social media, so he's always like,
mine isn't either. And I really think that that brings him so much joy.
So much joy, actually.
The fact that he's not on social media.
Yeah, that's his joy prescription right there.
Yeah, don't go on social media, or if you are, like, use it for good. And if you see yourself comparing or you see posts that make you feel bad about yourself, then you're not using it correctly. Like, change the way you use it.
Yeah, exactly. Or if there are people that really are toxic to you, just unfollow them.
Block.
Exactly. Well, thanks, Tiffany. I love that you were able to come on today and, you know, talk to us about everything you've experienced. I love your candidacy. I love your, you know, your joy that you bring to others too. So I appreciate you.
Yay. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. I'm Dr. Samina Rahman, Gyno Girl. Thanks for joining me on another episode of Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. Remember, I'm here to educate so you can advocate for yourself. Please join me on my next episode.
If you have a second, please subscribe to this podcast. I'd love for you to be a follower and learn as much as you can about the things that we're going to talk about with all the people on our journey. Please review us on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. These reviews really help. review us, comment, tell me what else you want to hear to get more information. My practice website is www.cgcchicago.com. My website for Gyno Girl is www.gynogirltv.com. My Instagram is Gyno Girl, so please follow me for some good content. Additionally, I have a YouTube channel, Gyno Girl TV, where I love to talk about all these things on YouTube. And please subscribe to my newsletter, Gyno Girl News, which will be available on my website. I will see you next time.